listen to the best of the church's music for the Advent season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Advent season, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Whatever our beliefs, we know that the birth of Jesus Christ and the story of this incredible life forever changed the course of human history.
Actually, he's willing to serve even the very couple in this case, anything they wanted for any occasion, except for a wedding, because it's not about the customer, it's about the message, which was to affirm that same-sex relationships are marriages. He doesn't believe that, and he doesn't want to create a cake expressing that message.
Evangelicals understand, in large part, our emotions to be like antennas to catch the impressions that come from God.
East Africa, LCMS missionaries, love issues, etc., especially on demand. Bwana Yesu asifiwe.
We read the headlines, and sometimes you have to search for headlines like this. These are not the kind of stories that, unless they linger for a long time, really make it into the news, but they are stories usually of fine legal points about human life, about human dignity, fine medical points about, well, when does life end or when does life begin, and perhaps even find ethical points there where things, like in the case of, say, Terry Schindler Schiavo, the ethical points being made on one side were very, very disconcerting. We might even call them unethical points. Is there another facet to these many bioethical battles that we've talked about for years here on Issues Etc. that we haven't talked about? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Friday afternoon, December the 8th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about self-sacrificial love and bioethics with Wesley Smith to kick things off today a little bit later. The consequences of crossing the LGBTQ movement. Mark Hemingway writes about the tragic life and death of a porn star bullied, it appears, into suicide. We'll find out why. Dr. Arthur Just will join us. We'll be studying the Advent hymn on Jordan's Bank, the Baptist Cry. Then it's Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week, a simple game we like to play with our listeners where we play four soundbites from this week's Issues Etc. audio. Then you vote by giving us a call, 1-877-623-6943. Sending us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or vote at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. In the meantime, Wesley Smith joins us to talk about self-sacrificial love and bioethics. He's senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, a consultant to the Patients' Rights Council, author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Due Harm Medicine, a National Review columnist for National Review Online, and author of a recent column for First Things titled Self-Sacrificial Love in the Bioethics Sphere. Wesley, welcome back.
Hey, Merry Christmas.
And to you as well. You have written recently, there's a lot to tell in these stories, famous stories of bioethical battles over the care or even the life of someone's loved one. But there's a facet that you've written about recently. What is it?
Well, you know, I was thinking about what I would write for this Friday's First Things piece. I write in it biweekly. And it struck me because it was Advent. I was thinking about self-sacrificial love. And the thing that I think so many people miss when you hear of the, you know, the famous stories like the Terry Schiavo case and the Jahi McMath case, you know, we see them in the kind of on the news, and you see them, the stories, should Terry have her feeding tube taken away? Who should decide? We don't see them as people. We don't see the human story. And I've been very privileged and honored over my many years in dealing with these issues to participate or report on people who are going through this crucible of fighting for their loved ones' lives. Some of the cases I've worked with and the people I've worked with have been very famous, like the Terry Schiavo case. I am still, but at the time was writing, trying to help save Terry's life, and, you know, I'm still very close to Terry Schiavo's family. Others have been, you know, are people that never made the news. And the thing that struck me, whether they are famous cases or obscure cases, is that a lot of people, when it really comes down to it and their loved one is in time of desperate need, find a place deep within their hearts to really sacrifice on behalf of others. They sacrifice finances. They sacrifice scorn from family sometimes. They sacrifice put down by bioethicists. And so I thought I would write about the three famous cases over the years in this regard. The bioethics sphere is the crucible. That's the term I gave for the crucible of these kinds of disputes. And also a little bit about some of the less famous ones, like the woman in Canada. This is one of the most moving cases I've ever involved with. A woman came up to me in Canada many years ago, and I'd given a speech, and she just started sobbing and sobbing about how her little girl was being pushed off of life support by the doctors, and she didn't know what to do. And we talked, and, you know, I gave her some thoughts and some ideas, et cetera, whatever, you know. And then time goes on. I don't even think about it anymore. And I go back to Canada some 10 years later, and this woman walks up to me and she says, "Do you remember me?" And her face was very familiar. And I said, "Well, you seem familiar to me." And she reminded me of that circumstance, which then came back to mind. I said, "Oh, yes." And she said, "I want you to meet somebody." And she turns, brings up this young, say, 15-year-old teenager and said, "This is my daughter." You know, and she had saved her daughter's life. And I'll tell you, the tears, even now, run down my face. What that woman was going through, and she succeeded. She saved that little girl by pushing and pushing and fighting and fighting. And the little girl not only got better when the doctor said she was going to die, but she was thriving by the time I met her. Those are the things that happen every day. And you know, many times, of course, I don't even become aware of most of them. But people every day are out there fighting for their loved ones' health, their safety, and their lives in these kinds of bioethical disputes.
And they're doing it not simply, we could talk about self-sacrificial love. In many cases, we never hear about where nothing is in dispute. They're caring for a loved one.
Yes, of course, absolutely.
But these people are doing this and fighting a battle, often legal, biomedical battles, at the same time, aren't they?
Yes, and sometimes with beloved family members. I mean, families being torn apart. You know, should dad's feeding tube be taken away? Those kinds of questions can tear families apart. You know, should we, should, you know, who should decide what gets done? I mean, they're just, you know, it's almost an infinite variety of decisions and disputes that can arise. And also then there are the people who are families are united, and then you've got the very powerful bioethics committees in hospitals. And there's a lot of, there may be pressure on doctors saying, you know, there's no hope, it's time to stop care and this kind of thing. And, you know, in some cases, and I'm not casting aspersions at hospitals or doctors. I mean, they are also involved, nurses and doctors, in self-sacrificial love. I've been a volunteer chaplain at a hospital in the ICU, and I've seen the powerful commitment of doctors and nurses to their patients. So, you know, I'm not casting aspersions here, but there are times when people who are saying, "Look, my loved one is actually reacting, and just because you're not seeing it doesn't make it not so," you know, where sometimes people feel like they need to go to the hospital to visit their loved ones with a lawyer. And that's the kind of thing that I've been on the show to talk about medical conscience and feudal care. You know, say, look, coercion has no place in healthcare because coercion destroys trust. What we need are mediation. What we need is good communication. Trying to force people to make particular decisions, particularly with regard to right or life and death, can end up in some very dark places.
And to put the fine point on self-sacrificial, it's not just of time, of just the of giving of one's self, but, and perhaps least on the list for many of these people, is the financial sacrifice that is often required of them.
People sometimes, Bob Schindler, who was trying to save Terry Schiavo, his daughter, basically spent himself into the dirt You know, people were casting aspersions. They were receiving death threats. The Schindler family. They were being castigated as somehow being in it for the money. When what actually happened was that Bob Schindler basically spent his retirement money, you know, to try to save his daughter's life. The finances on these things, in addition to just the hospital circumstances, but if you're involved in a lawsuit, if you're involved in litigation, you're hiring lawyers. Even the cases like in the Terri Schiavo case where the Schindlers received some support from pro-life legal foundations, it still, you know, really took a hunk out of their security.
So I think what it highlights to me, Wesley, is that these are human battles, not just legal principles, not
exactly.
Just ideas. We often speak about the ideas, which are very important, but I think it helps us all to remember that we're talking about people who are really going through this in real time on the ground.
That's right, and these are not people like you and I who are used to the public sphere, right? Who are used to perhaps grappling with ideas and battling in terms of debates. These are people who are living normal lives, ordinary lives, in the sense that you know they might be a business person, or they might be a retired person, or they might be a housewife or whatever, a store clerk. And they're suddenly thrust into something for which they're not prepared. And to find people find within themselves a depth of commitment and a reserve of strength is really something to behold. And I think, and I'm talking to myself here too, that, you know, sometimes we look at stories that are on the news and we want to cast judgment. I think about the people that I've dealt with and see some of the aspersions that have been cast against them and knowing them to be false, I always have to stop myself too. You know, I don't know the intimacy of certain circumstances, and perhaps as somebody great once said, judge not lest ye be judged.
When we see these on the news, I think it's also easy to think that it could not really happened to us, but you even begin your piece in First Things saying, you know, one minute you're just living your life, and the next minute you can find yourself in these, not just the difficult circumstances of having to protect a loved one in everyday care, but of trying to protect their lives.
Yes. And it can happen very quickly. And one of the reasons that I do my work is I want people to understand that the days of Marcus Welby are over. You know, the old TV show, that the hospital circumstance, what keeps, in my view, medicine ethical in the hospitals today are the people who work in it. But you have a lot of advocacy at the bioethics level and up in the medical intelligentsia for things like healthcare rationing, feudal care theory, where doctors refuse wanted life-sustaining treatment, things of that sort that can reach out to bite families who aren't expecting it, who are dealing with a sudden or perhaps expected. For example, the woman I mentioned in the article whose husband had Alzheimer's disease, and she had signed a do not resuscitate order. She had signed an order, her husband was very disabled by this time, do not give antibiotics if he gets an infection order, but that wasn't enough for the doctor. The doctor wanted to pull the husband's feeding tube, and the woman said, look, my husband is a Christian, and he would not want to do that because he would think of that as suicide. And the fight she had to put up just to maintain food and water for her husband, and he lived for 3 more years after that experience. It was hard enough for her to deal with her husband visiting him every day, seeing him in such a helpless condition, and then having to go into a hospital environment that was hostile to her. And I watched this, and she was elderly, you know, and she's standing up for her husband's rights. She's standing up for her husband's life, you know, and so I went with her once to a bioethics committee meeting, and, you know, everybody knew each other, and were looking at her as if she were a defendant in a criminal case. But she stood up against it, and she stood up to it, and she prevailed.
What needs to change with just a couple minutes here? What needs to change in medicine today to make these circumstances that we cannot prevent not turn into a battle for loved ones?
Yeah, I think we have to, humanize people who are in the sickbed. And I think something that that patients can do that I think would be very helpful. And I did this for with my mother. When my mother, I brought her into my home. My wife and I cared for her for the last 6 months of her life when she was dying of Alzheimer's. And I wrote a letter for caregivers who had come in, and I was explaining to them, you know, my mother wasn't always like this. And I gave them a one-page biography of my mother's life, how she'd been the head of the PTA in my elementary school, had been my Cub Scout den leader, things of that sort, how she, when my grandmother's beauty shop was failing because my grandmother was getting too elderly to handle it correctly, my mother went to beautician school and took over the beauty shop to save the business and made it thrive, things of that sort. And it was interesting, all of the people who were coming in to care for my mother, to help us out, when they saw that, it you could just see them. They'd look at her and they'd see her differently. You know what I mean? And it's so easy for us to look at somebody who's in an extreme situation and think that's the sum of who they are and were, and it isn't. And I think when we let doctors humanize our loved ones for the medical people, then and the people, of course, are human beings, they're going to react to that. And of course, I do believe that doctors and nurses try to do this, is to remain human and remain to, you know, because they get so caught up in the technology of the thing and the excellence and the science of it, to take a step back and think, wait a second, you know, it's not just that. It used to be called the art of medicine. It's looking at this as this person as a human being. And then when there are disputes, both sides entering into good faith discussions, and nobody try to coerce family members into taking decisions that they will not only regret, but feel a bitter injustice. Sometimes, approached after speeches, people come up and they tell me these stories, and they're so filled with anger and bitterness, feeling that their loved ones were killed in hospitals when they probably weren't, and this kind of thing. And in those circumstances, I try to help people understand, you know what, if that terrible injustice, you don't want it to take two people. So you can't allow your life to stop at that moment, and a lot of people do, and I understand it, because you know my dad experienced something with the Veterans Administration that if I focused on, I'd remain bitter to this day. But you have to put it in a box and stick it on a shelf, you know, and go on with your life. Otherwise, there've been two injustices instead of one.
Wesley Smith is senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, a consultant to the Patients' Rights Council, author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Do Harm Medicine. He's a columnist for National Review Online and author of a recent column for First Things titled Self-Sacrificial Love in the Bioethics Sphere. You'll find a link to it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Wesley, keep up the good work, and thank you very much.
Well, thanks, and I really appreciate how you support my work.
When we come back, Mark Hemingway will be with us. Tragic story of not only the life of a young 23-year-old porn star who took her life recently after several days of online bullying. It has something to do with Jack Phillips and him refusing to bake a cake. We'll find out what it is after this.
Give the gift of time this Christmas with a gift certificate from The Cleaning Authority. Call toll-free 1-866-827-0062 or visit thecleaningauthority.com. A happy wife is a happy life. A Christmas gift certificate from your favorite house cleaning service, The Cleaning Authority, 866-827-0062 or thecleaningauthority.com.
This holiday shopping season, skip the Fruit of the Month Club. Don't fall for any ridiculous as-seen-on-TV offers. Just say no to ugly sweaters. Instead, give your family and friends the best of Lutheran reflection on faith and life, theology and culture, delivered monthly right to their mailboxes. Give them the Lutheran Witness magazine. Visit cph.org/witness to purchase subscriptions for Christmas or anytime. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Are you concerned that nativity scenes aren't being displayed in public places? Why not display one at your church or your home? The Outdoor Nativity Store produces durable, affordable, and American-made outdoor nativities for Christians around the world. To view a variety of nativity sets, visit OutdoorNativityStore.com. These nativities will hold up under the harshest weather conditions, snow, ice, and wind. The Outdoor Nativity Store, OutdoorNativityStore.com.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.